This is the live feed. It's your connection to live music and entertainment in Winona. Support for this program is made possible by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
Welcome, I'm Anna Flores, and you are tuning in to the live feed as we continue our two-part series with jazz musician and St. Mary's professor, Dr. John Paulson. Therese Tenseth and I speak with Paulson about his past performances with well-known entertainers and what it's like being a musician in Winona now. We will also hear an excerpt from the John Paulson Jazz Trio performance at Steamboat Days, here on the live feed. You've had a chance to play with a number of famous musicians like the Cab Calloway Orchestra and Andy Williams. Tell me a little about that and some good performances. Who else you've performed with?
Well, Cab Calloway Orchestra is C.B., who was Cab Calloway's grandson.
Right, because he's passed, right?
Yeah. That was pretty amazing because we went from our school concert the Friday night before that to Saturday afternoon rehearsal with those guys, and that was kind of a stark contrast of the student rehearsal situation to the professional really quickly. He showed up, he had on a sort of a suede blue-gray zoot suit and hat with shades, and this was at the rehearsal. We were all sitting there kind of flipping through this music and looking at all these different people who were brought together, never played together before, and this was 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and the show was at 8, and we're flipping through our music, and I think it was supposed to start at 3, and the second hand came up on 3, and he said, well, there's a really tough saxophone part on the first number at measure 28. Let's start there. And that's kind of the way it went. And I think on the first number, there was a big tenor saxophone solo, and I got lost on the chord changes. And in an educational context, it would be like, that's cool, you know, let's take it again, and, you know, it's all right, Bill, you know, you're doing fine, and all sorts of that. And he was like, what's the matter, you know, it's not that hard. He said, you went to the F too early and stuff, and, you know, the whole band is sitting there, and it's just basically humiliating, you know. So we did it again, and basically the same thing happened. And then he just went on to the next tune. And I'm sitting there thinking, what's going to happen tonight at this show? And at the end of it, I pulled the rhythm section over the piano, bass, and drums. CB was still there, and I said, could we just go through those chords on that first tune again? And they said, sure. So they ran them really quickly, and I played through it kind of quietly while he was still putting stuff away. And I said, it's not really that hard. And he said, no, you're making it harder than it is. And he said, it's not that hard. And then there were a couple other solos that these people had, and he wasn't happy with what they were doing, and he took their solos away from them. And he asked, okay, who else would want to try it? And I'm down at the end, and I kind of halfway raised my hand up sheepishly with my head down, and he said, oh, my man. He said, do you want to try it again? So I foolishly jumped in there, but how does the saying go? You know, no guts, no glory, or whatever. So, but he let me keep it. So I kept that solo. And then on the show, when we started out, you know, then he came out in a bright cream-colored zoot suit with this huge hat and a fur thing on and these huge shades and stuff like that, and counted off this first tune. And this solo at the rehearsal that was a mess was about, you know, a third of the way through the tune. And I got through it, and I said, okay, I'm going to concentrate. I'm not going to blow this, and I'm going to nail this. So I was concentrating so hard, I got through it, and stayed with the chord changes. It was playing pretty conservative. And my butt is halfway down to the chair sitting down, and he's going, no, get up, get up. And he opened up the whole thing. I mean, he hadn't even done this during rehearsal. He extended the whole solo section, and then he wanted me to do this scat thing. He was doing the scat singing back and forth and wanted me to do like a question and answer thing with him. And this thing went on for like 8 minutes, and my buddy Wayne Kimber from town here was in the audience, you know, at the end of the show. He said, Paulson, you look like you got shot out of a cannon on that first tune. You know, then it went on from there. So this was a stark contrast to the, you know, the student jazz concert the night before, which was all pretty tamed. And I heard somebody in the trombone section behind me saying something to the effect of, this is the way it was at rehearsal, but watch out, anything could happen tonight, because this guy had played the show with him before. And some of the other things that happen are, there's a huge variance between the way that these books for these shows are organized and how well they're written out and things. And sometimes you play basically straight through it and it's pretty easy to put together in 2 hours. Other times you're on the edge of the chair and you have no idea what's going to happen. And you know, the Temptations in Rochester was pretty difficult rehearsal. You know, there were a lot of places where the band was lost during the show and stuff. I mean, the rhythm section, the piano, the, you know, like the bass, drums, and the guitar player and stuff were so solid. I think they brought them with them. And, you know, it didn't fall apart or anything like that, but it wasn't really tight by any means. And Mel Torme was one that I remember as being just really cleanly written and real accessible to play and no really big difficult spots or anything. The musicians have a better time when the music is clean and there's not a lot of things crossed out. Sometimes it'll be written, you know, like four times and then it's crossed out, so then you get to it. Are you supposed to play that four times or ignore that? Because that's the way they did it in Nashville, you know, two nights ago or whatever. It was interesting playing with Bob Hope, backing him up. I did two shows with him, sort of the same band, but there was one in Rochester and then St. Cloud. And it was interesting to work with a comedian because, obviously the musical tunes were pretty much the same, but to kind of hear how he worked the crowd and would change his shtick with the different, you know, he had medical jokes and stuff like that in Rochester that he didn't have in St. Cloud, and kind of temper the thing and play off of the audience and stuff to see how much change there was. I moved out here from Seattle, and, you know, it was Salt Lake City and Los Angeles and stuff before that. And one of the neat things about being in this area is being a person like me, a big fish in a small pond, getting called to be able to play a show like that, because I probably would have never gotten called in Los Angeles or Seattle. And one of the interesting things that happened in Seattle was I was playing in the University of Seattle Jazz Ensemble, and the first summer that I moved up there to work on my doctorate, and the guy who runs the University Jazz Ensemble was also the contractor for the Seattle Seahawks band that they had, and I had never been to an NFL game. And one of the things I'm fond of telling the students is that Kenny G he graduated from the University of Washington. He was around in the area and stuff. And the director had called him for a sub, and he played a couple of these shows. They were like $35 shows where you wore your little Seattle Seahawks blue jacket with their emblem and stuff. And
yeah, you got dressed up.
Yeah, it still smelled from the band who had it the previous season and things. But I said that, man, you sound really good. You know, are you going to play all summer? And he said, no, I'm putting my band together. I'm going to get out of here. And he did. Obviously, you know, he's not playing $35 gigs anymore.
If you weren't doing music, what else would you be doing?
I've thought of that. That's an interesting question. Especially if something happened, you know. I'm not that young anymore, and saxophone players need all their fingers and so on and so forth. So a lot of times I've asked myself, you know, what if I had a stroke, or what if I was in a car wreck or something? I must be really suited to what I'm doing because I can't think of too many other things. I think in terms of being involved with the arts, even though my dad was a medical doctor, he was real into black and white photography, and he had a photography lab. Mm-hmm. And I've always been real interested in taking pictures. And he taught me some basic things. I've never really taken any photography classes. But I think I might be real interested in that, and I might even pursue jazz in terms of that, I've thought. Photographing jazz musicians.
Hey, there you
play.
Go.
Because I love those books, you know, where you see a tenor player sitting there and there's cigarettes going and the smoke is rising. You know, there's some great pictures of Dexter Gordon like that. And beyond that, I'm not sure what I would do. You know, work in the yard, probably. You know, I think I would probably enjoy teaching, especially things that involve art concepts. Mm-hmm. I enjoy teaching the art score class at St. Mary's, which is interdisciplinary, if you will. People are supposed to go to all these different performing events and things, but the concept of it is making connections between the different arts and some of the commonalities and things there. I find that really intriguing, and I might even end up doing some writing in that regard. It doesn't seem that there's a lot of materials to use there, but I think it's something that we all kind of think about if we're involved in the art. You're a visual artist. You think about things that cut across disciplines, you know, like repetition and contrast. I get into the idea of motifs.
Sure.
You know, you've got all these examples of musical motifs, and then I go around the campus and take pictures and make PowerPoint and Blackboard presentations where the JPEGs show the motivic repetition and stuff, and then play musical examples to go along with that. And those types of things are really intriguing. That's why I like the notion of being an academic dean, is because you would be working with theater and dance and music people and stuff too, so who knows? It used to be that when people are 60 years old, they were done, but now I'm doing triathlons, so... Who knows what I've got left?
That's better than me.
Who knows what I've got left?
What's it like being an artist in the Winona area, specifically a musician? Like the pros, the cons, what do you think Winona needs to do?
Oh, that's real easy to answer. Well, I think it's a really fertile place for the arts. It was really frustrating when I first moved here, and I knew that it would be a challenge, having lived in large metropolitan areas. But hanging in there and working on it, after about probably 5+ years of really tenaciously trying to make it happen, a lot of people gave me breaks because of my position. Like some of the singers, you know, like Andy Williams and the Mel Torme show, a couple of those things were the first couple of years that I was here. And like Greg Belfany down at the University of Wisconsin La Crosse, who does basically the same thing that I do up here, directs the jazz band and teaches saxophone and stuff. Because of my position, had called me to play these things without even really knowing me. It opened up a lot of these doors. And then the way the business works is it's very heavy on the networking. So getting that out there, then little by little, the jazz freelancing thing really started to take off. And it's really to the point now where if I want free time now, I have to turn things down. And that doesn't happen overnight, but I've been very conscientious about being professional, about turning calls and hiring the right musicians and making sure that the people are happy with the music that I provide and things. And like Dave Liebman said, you know, considering the context when you're playing, if you're playing from where we're sitting from each other, you can't play a huge tenor saxophone solo that's going to blow the salad off of somebody's plate if they're trying to eat dinner. You know, then they're going to realize they've got the wrong musicians and they should have never called you to play background music if it is background. But if it's on a stage, we're going to do a couple nights at the La Crosse Jazz Festival this summer, and you know that's a concert, that's a different context, and then you play differently. So playing correctly in the right context and keeping people happy and staying professional, I'm a firm believer in first commitments. You know, when I make a commitment to somebody to not, if something better comes along, to stay with the first thing, because you know in the long run that's a better choice anyway. The other thing that's worked out really well in Winona has been the sort of the triangle between La Crosse, Winona, and Rochester in terms of the arts, in terms of freelancing, playing jazz and things. The money isn't real different, which is kind of the frustrating thing about Rochester. And before the recession, there were a lot of doctors' parties where they graduated. It seemed like in the spring, there would be half a dozen calls. We'd play for the dentists one week and the cardiologists another week. They'd have graduation parties. They'd be finishing these different medical programs.
I bet the dentists have the better parties.
Yeah.
Why?
No, I'm just saying.
Well, it's really hard to play, though, when you're all injected with Novocaine. They stick those things in the hors d'oeuvres. So it's proved to be a really good situation for me. And again, you ask me about the good points and the bad points. One of the things, it's not necessarily a bad point, but it's something that the artist in a community like Winona has to consider, and that's the same thing that provides the opportunities for you, the big fish and the small pond syndrome, can be dangerous, you know, if you don't challenge yourself or keep your abilities in mind in terms of the big picture, the context. Yeah, I'm a great B-flat flute player in Goodview, but when I go to New York and I hear 20-year-olds from Connecticut, you know, who are there on full music scholarships at Manhattan School of Music, who play better and with more maturity and more insight than I do in their 20s, then you come home and it
puts things into perspective.
Perspective, right, exactly. Thank you for finishing that thought line for me, because that's what it's all about. You know, context and perspective is a big part of this.
What do you want your audience to take away from your performances?
Probably the same as any other artist. I would think most of them, I mean, there's exceptions, and we talk about this in the art score class that I teach, you know, the artists that seem to want to jar people and disturb them, you know, for whatever reason. I mean, you've seen visual art examples of that, and there's certainly music examples of that, you know, where the music is disturbing. But, you know, I think what I'm going for is joy and beauty. And this has a lot to do with where we got started when we were talking about the musician's quest for the sound. And I don't know if it's age-related, but, you know, I'm after a more melodic, more approachable overall sound and feeling to the music, whether I'm reinterpreting a jazz standard or whether it's one of my own compositions.
We go now to the John Paulson Jazz Trio performance at Steamboat Days.
Thank you. Thank you.
You have been listening to the live feed. We would like to thank Dr. John Paulson for speaking with us and the members of the John Paulson Jazz Trio for their performance at Winona's annual Steamboat Days. Join us here again every Wednesday and Friday evening for more of The Live Feed.
Thanks for listening to The Live Feed. The Live Feed is produced by KQAL-FM on the campus of Winona State University. For more information on tonight's show, visit us at kqal.org.